This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, I mentioned just a moment ago that I actually keep bumping into Nick Welpy. He's the CEO of Lily's Leaf, and we started talking, as I always do when I bump into someone who has interesting insights and perspectives and points of view and contacts within the broader political landscape. I always start talking to them about politics and trying to mine information and find out what they might be theorizing themselves about what's going on within the ANC in this case. And Nick is also running the excellent, and I can't say this enough, the excellent museum that's worth every South African's day, afternoon, morning, whatever it is that you can dedicate to doing this. A lot of people still off at the moment before the schools go back. Lily's Leaf is here in Rivonia. It is, of course, a key historical landmark in South Africa. It's the place that many of the Rivonia trialists were arrested at. It's also the place where Nelson Mandela buried his gun that was given to him by Haile Selassie. It's a fascinating place. It's still there. It's intact. It's worth going to see. And it's quite a beautiful story for those people who can tell it much better and more eruditely than I just have. So, Nick, it's a pleasure to see you, man. Thanks for coming in. I'm sorry it's taken so long.
It's an absolute pleasure, and thanks for having me on your show.
Sure. I mean, we spoke about this, 8 months ago?
More. I mean, we've been chatting on and off for years.
Well, it's nice to see you. How's Lily's Leaf?
It's good. I mean, you've made some very interesting points. I think, you know, there is a historical context to Lily's Leaf, which you've articulated. But beyond that, there is a critical here and now context, which has a historical root. We, you know, our media for the last 2 years and even longer has been about, and you've been talking about it as well, about the state of the ANC, about where are the ideals of this liberation movement that so captured the imagination, not only of South Africans, but the world. Because Lily's Leaf is focusing at the moment on international solidarity and listening to the stories of people from Sweden, Norway, about how the struggle resonated so strongly and powerfully in them. I mean, there is even an interview with Lindiwe, who talks about the way...
Lindiwe Zulu or Lindiwe Sisulu?
No, not Lindiwe.
Who are we talking about?
Lindiwe Mazibuko.
Oh, from the DA.
No, no, not Lindiwe. No, sorry, not Lindiwe. Oh, God, my mind's going completely blank. At the moment. Now the name. One of the... Let's go back.
One
of the struggle veterans. One of the struggle veterans. Suddenly my mind's lost, gone completely blank. But she says, the way the Swedes are behaving, it's almost as if they themselves have been persecuted.
The Swedes... Let's just be clear about this, because for a lot of people, you know, the international participation in the struggle wasn't as clear and obvious during that time. The Swedes were very involved in financing and the anti-apartheid struggle from outside. There were people who got actively involved that gave shelter and places in exile for ANC leaders.
Well, I mean, the point I'm trying to make here is this comment about how the remark about how they were behaving as if they themselves, which I think is a very pertinent and a very interesting comment, because it highlights how the struggle resonated with so many people, the ideals under which the struggle was being fought, the principles, those valiant principles which are articulated in the Freedom Charter about a non-racial society where South Africa belongs to all who live in it. And then the clauses, which we mustn't forget, which themselves today are still being debated as whether they're socialist, neoliberal, communist. I think the important thing is these ideals were articulated and presented by the people. I often say that of all the documents, I mean, if we've identified all the human rights documents that have arisen from the Cyrus Cylinder, which was the first attempt to articulate the notion of human rights all the way through. So you've got the Cyrus Cylinder, you've got the Magna
Declaration
Carta,
of Independence in America,
and then the rights of people in France. And if you look at it, I've often said this: the Freedom Charter is unique. because all these other documents were written by what I would like to call intellectuals. Mm-hmm. The Freedom Charter was written by the people, for the people of South Africa.
Clipton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And why am I talking about it? Because of these ideals which Lilliesleaf articulated historically, mm-hmm. and which resonated, as I mentioned, around the world, and inspired South Africans, and also was a way of liberating all South Africans, mm-hmm. today has been lost. And that's some of the things that you and your other colleagues have been talking about for many years.
I'm interested, and one of the reasons I wanted to get you in here is because there are a lot of people like you, a lot of stalwarts and veterans and people who are heart and soul ANC people, who I've spoken to in the last while, who talk about saving the ANC and how important the last elective conference was and how the ANC is 106 years old yesterday, and that this organization still has so much to give. And the cynical part of me says, and I'd like to have your response to this, and you know, feel free to be as brutal as you would like, either to me or to the ANC. I feel like their time is just up. Their usefulness, their ability to create narratives that are relevant to today, is much diluted. I feel like we're dealing with an old people's organization that is applying old ideas and old thinking. And if you looked even at the kinds of conversations and the kind of rhetoric that comes out of the ANC, even now under Cyril Ramaphosa, which some people are hailing as some sort of rebirth for the organization, it feels to me like this is an old and irrelevant business that we would be better rid of now. And just say goodbye to it. Normally when someone turns 100, you kind of realize that they're reaching their nadir.
Look, you've made some very valid points, and it has been a debate amongst a lot of people. Is the ANC relevant? Is a liberation movement relevant? Can a liberation movement make the transition from liberation movement to political party? This has been the million-dollar question and the million-dollar debate. How do you move away from being an organization that is struggling for a particular idea, a particular way of life, and then transform that movement into then a governing party, which the ANC has addressed. But I think one of the interesting things which we need to look at within that context is how the ANC over, I wouldn't say the last 106 years, but over, let's say, the previous 90 years, mm-hmm. was able to use a Marxist terminology, adapt to the epoch that it found itself in. And the idea of freshness was very pertinent to the ANC.
Well, even though Marxism by that stage was close to 200 years old. Yeah.
But
and has been shown all over the world where implemented to have been a demonstrable disaster.
Because
you're bringing up the history here.
So but what I'm trying to,
I'm saying yeah, now, yeah. now, if you look at the ANC now, and particularly just pre this elective conference, yeah. because we still don't know what this elective conference means, right? Just pre that, I'm thinking that for the average South African, we're looking at an organization here that is doing more for themselves, the individuals within the organization, than they ever have for the ordinary man, woman, or child on our dusty streets. And it bothers me, and it probably bothers a lot of other people who are affected far more directly, more, that the ANC is not able to reckon with itself, that we're dealing with people who it's forget about the transition from liberation movement to government. What does the ANC even stand for anymore?
Well, I'd like to just go back to your original question of relevance, mm-hmm. and then move on to this other aspect
because it ties in. Yeah.
What I was trying to say was that what made the ANC so unique was this battle of ideas that was the spine of the organization. And I grew up in that. My father was a leading intellectual within the ANC. And the notion of debate, of challenge, mm-hmm. was so critical. And when I used the Marxist terminology of remaining relevant to the mm-hmm. epoch, was because of the battle of ideas, because mm-hmm. of the ability to create new ideas which were pertinent and relevant to the period that they found themselves in. That intellectualism was encouraged because there was a recognition that intellectualism was a form of renewal, that when you started to challenge and question the ideas that you were holding onto at that particular moment, if you were able to continue to challenge them, you were remaining relevant.
But it's indisputable that that intellectual tradition has been decimated.
You're absolutely right. That's been one of the fundamental problems that we found ourselves in today within the context of the ANC.
I mean, you're there. Let's just reflect back to, because we're going to keep bouncing between the now and the then. You've got Lily's Leaf, which represents so much of what was right about the struggle. You had ordinary people in society helping political activists to change a country from within and without, doing things that were dangerous to them, that were dangerous to society, in terms of the state of emergency and the kind of controls that the old apartheid government was trying to implement, and that very successfully in some places they did, and to the detriment of the people in those places. And then you look at what they've got now in terms of who's leading the thought, the battle of ideas within the ANC. It's paltry.
Well, I think you made the point, the intellectualism has been decimated within the ANC, and that has been one of the fundamental problems. Because, again, if you look at going back to the 60s, and let's not talk about Lily's Leaf, but if you talk about the conference of Morogoro, that was a conference of renewal. That was a conference of let's be introspective, let's be critical, let's evaluate where we are, let's take a look at what is currently happening externally within the struggle in the broader context, and also let us look and see whether we are remaining relevant to the period that we find ourselves in within the context of the struggle.
So are they?
And that is not happening.
The ANC relevant now, in your opinion?
Yes, but we have to, let's put it this way. We are relevant, but we need to rediscover the relevance of why we exist. We need to rediscover who we are. It is like someone who has who started off as an ordinary person and became famous and lost their way. You know, and suddenly were taken up with all the pomp and ceremony of wealth, of fame, and lost who they were in that. And then said, hold on. Everyone around them said, this is not you. You are not this person. You need to now take a step back and reflect on who you were and who you were as a person and rediscover who you were. Because if I can just say, there's an interesting dynamic playing out here. Mm-hmm. You know, in the lead up to the conference, you know, I spoke to a lot of people around what their feelings were. And they were not ANC. I would say a lot of them were traditional DA supporters, if one was to categorize them. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. They all said, we cannot afford to have Dlamini Zuma elected president of the ANC. And it's ironic, because if you think about it, Gareth, the polls showed if she was elected president of the ANC, the probability of the ANC losing the election was actually quite high. And you would think that the opposition would be saying, yes, elect her so we can get a new political party or a coalition of political parties to run this country. But it underpinned, I think, a very fundamental recognition that at the moment, regardless of how far we as the ANC have strayed from our historical mission, our historical goal, this country still needs the ANC because it is the glue that holds us together. It is the nexus around which everything comes together. And for a while, we still need it, because I think there was a recognition, and there is a recognition, that without the ANC as the core, as the center of power, there is a possibility this country could implode. So for as how bad we have done, for how far we have strayed from those fundamental key ideals. And when Sia contacted me and said, come on the show, I started to read again through the eye of the needle. Yeah. It is such a relevant, pertinent document, and it is almost a crystal ball So you go back to 2001, read this document as if you were in 2001, and then take a time jump back to 2018 and say, my God, how prophetic this document was, how the ANC saw what could possibly happen and articulated it. The question, though, is how did we move from the fact that we recognized that where we are today was a fundamental problem that could arise back then and allow it to happen today? How could we allow ourselves to go from recognizing that the state of the ANC that we find today, we wrote about in 2001, but still allowed it to happen, and we still allowed ourselves to drift down that particular path?
Well, I think, isn't that because of individuals within the organization who've led it astray more than a kind of collective? Because there hasn't been much in terms of collective decision-making and policy-making at any principal level. It's mostly been about jockeying for position, and we all get very caught up in this. Is it Nkosazana? Is it Cyril? What role does Ace Magashule play? We make it about the people. And the ANC's charter and its principles remain the same, and they're fairly solid. And you would know if you arrived as an alien today and you read those documents, what kind of an organization you were dealing with, hopefully. Isn't it right to question why people inside have become so important? You know, all through the struggle and even up to the kind of latter part of Thabo Mbeki's administration, ANC people always used to credit the organization. They always made it about the organization. They were careful not to hero worship individuals. Has that disappeared? Has that changed? Has it become about people within the situation rather than the system or the organization itself?
To a large extent, again, I would say you're right. I mean, again, if you go back to the document, they talk about, you know, again, one of the big issues has been the issue of the branches.
Mm.
And the membership, what type of members are we attracting? And in the document, again, they talk about we must protect against individuals joining the ANC and using the ANC as a stepping stone, as using the ANC as a tool to advance their own self-interest.
Yeah, but let's not talk about it like it hasn't happened.
Yes, but it has. But I'm talking about what they talked about in 2001 and what we have witnessed over the last 10 years. I mean, again, if I can talk about Moses Katana, one of our greatest struggle stalwarts. He, the way he talked about the struggle and articulated it, which the ANC mirrored, he talked about there is no place for self-interest within the liberation movement. There is no place for I. I doesn't exist. If you join the liberation movement, you join the ANC.
But is that someone who has high ideals and principles, or is that someone who is terrifically naive about human nature? What is it?
I would say it's a combination of both, but I also say that it's a culture. There was a very strong culture within the ANC about that. I'm not saying that the ANC was lily white, was pure, and that were no problems within the ANC.
Sure.
I mean, there's no such thing as the perfect organization.
I mean, we know that there were quiet purges of certain ideas,
yes,
and even sometimes people.
We made mistakes.
Can I move forward to now? Because this is where I'm interested in particularly the insights. You have a lot of contacts within the leadership of the organization. You speak to a lot of people in the ANC and outside of the ANC who are critical of it. Who will take forward the intellectual battle of ideas now? Are there enough people inside the organization, or have all the clever blacks, as our president pejoratively called them not so long ago, have all of them moved to other pastures? Have some of them moved to the EFF, others to non-political organizations? Where are these intellectuals that will help renew the ANC this time around?
They are still there. Some of them have called it, you know, like, let's say, have kind of merged into the woodwork during this period, because there was also a period of intolerance, that if you were critical, if you stood up to the notion of the battle of ideas, because again, if I can just kind of move back to a historical critique and then come forward, I mean, the idea was that the ANC was a group was a collective of, not individualism, of a collective of individuals who expressed ideas, but then acknowledged that the collective,
this idea that it could,
individuality became, is, so you had, so if I can say, you had the notion of individuality within the ANC, that you would challenge each other, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, the majority decision would rule. And we saw that, for example, in 1958 when Robert Sobukwe left the ANC because he did not agree with the position of the ANC on communism
and Pan-Africanism
and on the question of the Freedom Charter.
Sure.
So coming back, they are still there today. They haven't left. They haven't, you know, some have moved across, but they still are there. There is still that tradition. It hasn't disappeared. It has just been usurped by wanton self-interest.
Right.
And that group of wanton self-interest individuals have taken over. There is still a very strong core of ANC cadres who are intellectual. I'm on a discussion group and I see them. They are strong.
Where are you guys? On like WhatsApp?
It's a WhatsApp.
Is this what? Okay, we got to get on there. We got to, these WhatsApp groups have to become public so we can all join in, you know, because I think it's so important that we encourage this sort of discussion. Let me just throw in for a brief moment. I had a really interesting discussion with someone not so long ago who had a great insight into what's going on politically. They said the ANC is still the place of the richest and deepest and most meaningful political intellectual discourse in South Africa, even though it's been eroded to such a degree by this current administration. Because if you look at the DA, nobody really knows what they stand for at the moment. They're kind of, Musi Maimane embodies this sort of soft, neoliberal, occasionally compassionate conservative. Nobody really knows what he represents. He doesn't even know what he represents. You got the EFF on the other side, who are populist, but don't often have the political wherewithal or the knowledge or the experience that a 106-year-old organization could have to mine the policy thought that needs to go into creating, you know, effective government intervention in society, and not necessarily intervention in a bad way, but perhaps even the stuff that just gets people talking about the things that make a difference, the stuff that makes the country move forward rather than backward. There is no doubt that the ANC still houses the vast majority of minds that want to engage in that stuff. But is it still the organization that does this discussion behind closed doors? Isn't it time for them to start bringing it out into the open?
Look, I think, again, you know, you're touching upon issues which the ANC are grappling with, about the idea of, as a liberation movement, you did things secretly in behind closed doors. You operated in
clandestine ways.
It was a clandestine movement. Have we moved away from it? To some degree, we haven't, and that's part of the problem. I mean, if I can just throw in the importance of Lilliesleaf again, Nelson on his last visit in 2005 said what made Lilliesleaf unique was it was a place of intellectual, ideological, strategic, military discourse and engagement. And of course, we homed in on discourse and engagement.
Around that kitchen table, that was exactly what happened.
Yes. Yeah. In those rooms, they debated. Right. They were, on the day of the raid, on the 11th of July 1963, they were debating Operation Mayibuya. Even when we were interviewing people like Ahmed Kathrada, Andrew Mulungeni, Dennis Goldberg, Arthur Goldreich, in 2004-05, they were still debating. They were still arguing over the document. So there is a strong foundation and principle of debate, dialogue, and discussion within the ANC. You can't get rid of it. You can suppress it. You can push it down. But like any good thing, like cream, it will eventually rise to the top. It is unfortunate that we've gone through this period. It is unfortunate we've allowed this wonderful organization to be derailed. But because we've been derailed, it doesn't mean that we can't get ourselves back on the right track. Because they still exist. They are still a lot of great intellectuals within the ANC who can make meaningful contribution to reinvigorating the organization, to make it a dynamic, creative organization that it once was. I do not subscribe to the notion that age is a critical factor, because if we just look at Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn, two gentlemen in their mid-60s and early 70s, how they resonated with the youth.
Donald Trump would call them losers.
Well,
I suspect, yeah. I mean, just to end this, because I love talking to you and we could carry on all morning, even though we don't have time. I suspect you'd make a very bad communist, because you've extolled in the last half hour the virtues of intellectualism and the bourgeoisie, effectively, and individuals.
No, individuality.
Individuality. Individuals. Could argue individuals on the other side of things have made things worse, which we did cover.
But I think there's, if I can just pick up on that, I mean, I think there is a subtle difference between individuality and individualism. Individualism is about self. Individuality for me is about the ability to express
and to contribute to the collective.
To contribute, but accept at the end of the day that the majority rules. So even if you're in the minority and you lose the battle of ideas, you subscribe to that idea because you are part of a collective that has reached that through debate, dialogue, and engagement. I mean, I remember one day, turning to my father, who was one of the leading intellectuals within the ANC, and I said to him, how do you allow people to challenge you? And he looked at me and said, but that's part of how we grow.
Yeah.
He was a communist, but he believed in the fact that you debated and you discussed, and you had that debate around ideas, and at the end of the day, if you could not convince your fellow comrades that this was the idea to pursue and that idea was accepted, you went with that idea. And I think that is a very strong notion that underpinned the ANC. And it's a notion that Lily's Leaf believes strongly, because Lily's Leaf, we believe, is an articulation of that. And I believe very strongly in it. That
I would love to carry on this conversation, and perhaps we should, but for this morning we'll have to call it at an end.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for popping by, and we will come and visit you at Lily's Leaf shortly. I know that there are people who listen to us who are already very aware of what you're doing over there, and other people who have not yet had the pleasure of visiting, so I hope that they will make an effort to go and see what's going on at Lily's Leaf soon. Thank you so much. Nick Wolpe, he's the CEO of Lily's Leaf.
This is CliffCentral.com.